From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The outcome of next week's presidential election is being closely watched, not just by U.S. citizens, but by people around the world. We'll talk with a journalist from an online newspaper in the South African nation of Mali and a reporter from France 24. They're both here in Southwest Florida reporting on the election. We'll explore how America's unique election process is viewed by an international audience and what citizens of other countries feel they have at stake in the U.S. presidential election. Plus, with less than a week to go until Election Day, we conclude our series of conversations with the candidates and talks with incumbent U.S. Senator Bill Nelson and candidates for Florida's U.S. Congressional District 16 and 17 races. First, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Throughout this election season, we've been talking with candidates looking to represent Florida in the state legislature. With the election now less than a week away, we conclude our series of conversations with the candidates with a closer look at contenders looking to represent Southwest Florida at the federal level. We'll hear from candidates vying to win Florida's District 16 and 17 congressional races. We'll also take a look at Florida's U.S. Senate race. We asked the same questions of each of the candidates. We begin today with Florida's Democratic incumbent U.S. Senator Bill Nelson. Nelson currently sits on the Senate's Commerce, Budget, Finance, Intelligence, and Aging Committees. He's previously served six terms in the U.S. Congress and was formerly a Florida legislator and cabinet member. He's seeking a third term in the Senate this year. WGCU's Valerie Alker caught up with him recently by phone.
Senator Bill Nelson, Americans have said they are tired of so-called gridlock in Congress. What would you do to either change this perception or eliminate the gridlock?
Well, you have characterized it correctly. When people get way too partisan, when they get way too ideologically rigid, so they take the point of view that it's my way or no way, what you have is gridlock. And the genius of the American political system is that since we are such a big and diverse country, you have to respect the other fellow's point of view. You work out your differences, you build consensus, and that's how you govern. And what has been happening is we've been going in exactly the opposite direction of exceptional polarization because of partisan politics as well as ideological rigidity.
Many Americans have said that they feel the partisan divide is too wide. Do you agree? And what steps can you take, would you take, to help bridge that divide and enact legislation with bipartisan support?
Well, of course, that's what I try to do every day. I am responsible for the way that I conduct myself. And if you just look back at in the midst of all this gridlock, and yet we've passed some major bipartisan legislation. For example, the Restore the Gulf of Mexico Act. We passed that in the Senate 76-22. Remember, there were 45 states senators that were not on the Gulf, and we were able to get, in a huge bipartisan fashion, the senators from those states. And that's simply, I offered that as an amendment. My co-sponsor was a Republican senator from Alabama and the Democratic senator from Louisiana, and we passed that 76-22. I'll give you another example. A Republican senator from Texas and I passed the NASA authorization bill unanimously in the Senate to give direction to the future human space program out of low Earth orbit where our International Space Station is now. And by the time we got it over to the House, we worked the House and got a three-quarters vote for it. Well, that's an example because Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Republican, and I, no daylight between us. We worked and passed it. I'll give you one more example. the big transportation bill, which is also known as the highway bill, because a Democratic senator, Barbara Boxer, and a Republican senator, Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, Barbara Boxer of California, political opposites, but because the two of them worked together as the leaders of the Public Works and Transportation Committee, they fought off all the killer amendments and passed the transportation bill 74-22. So you see these little bright shining examples of bipartisanship in the midst of all this polarization, and it's clearly the way you have to go.
As a United States senator from Florida, a state hard hit by the economic downturn and still struggling to recover, what kind of legislation would you support that you think could help turn things around?
A majority of the Senate already knows what we have to do, and it's just all balled up in presidential politics right now. But when we go into session after the election in November and December, we will start working on getting the fiscal house in order. And what that has to be is not only cuts, but revenue produced from reforming the Internal Revenue Tax Code that is so riddled with special tax provisions and tax loopholes that benefit special interests. As a matter of fact, the value of all those tax loopholes in revenue lost over a 10-year period is an astounding $14 trillion. And if you go in and start taking out some of those tax loopholes, use that revenue to reform the tax code, simplify it, lower everybody's rates, because you've now got new revenue, including lowering the corporate tax rate, and then use the rest of the revenue to lower the deficit. That is exactly what I think is going to be done to bring the fiscal house in order, along with the targeted and necessary cuts that will continue.
What do you think is the most challenging issue Florida faces?
Well, of course, Florida, if you look locally, that's many, and we can discuss those, but Florida is a microcosm of the country. And that's in large part because the country has moved to Florida. And as a result, you see the problems of the country are the problems of Florida, and that is primarily coming out of the recession. We are in a slow turnaround. Remember where we were in September and October of 2008. Lehman Brothers had just gone down. The Wall Street banking system was crashing. The stock market was in absolute free fall. And then massive job layoffs for the next 18 months. But for the last 30 months, 2.5 years, we've seen private sector job growth in every one of those 30 months. The problem is that it's been slow. And especially in a state like ours that was so dependent in our economic engine on housing and real estate, when that housing bubble burst back there in 2008, 4 years ago, we were one of the states that suffered the most. But all the trends are up, so we're on the way coming out of the recession with the economic recovery.
So what do you think differentiates the challenges in Florida from the challenges in the rest of the nation, or do you think they're pretty much the same?
Well, the overall economic situation is basically a mirror image in Florida of the country as a whole. But individually, we have our own unique things, like the protection of our beaches, the protection of the Gulf of Mexico, not to let oil spills occur and ruin our tourism industry, not even to speak of ruin all of our military testing and training area, which is basically the Gulf of Mexico off the coast of Florida. Then we have the challenges of continuation of the restoration of the Everglades, the protection of the military jobs that we have, the fragile environment that we have that is so unique to Florida. You could go on and on down a laundry list, and then you talk about our people. We have more, as a percentage of the population, more senior citizens than any other state, and therefore the protection of Medicare and Social Security. There's a big contrast between my opponent and me. My opponent has voted to end the guaranteed benefit of Medicare and make it a system where a senior citizen would get a voucher, which is a piece of paper from the government that they would go and then negotiate with insurance companies for their health care. I don't think senior citizens want to eliminate that guaranteed benefit of Medicare. Then, of course, one of the continuing things we're going to have to keep the spotlight on is the veterans coming home from the war. And what we are going to see is the effects of these wars for years and years in veterans' health care. We look at the concussions in the National Football League. We're going to see the same effect as a result of these blasts, even if they did not lose a limb or get a traumatic brain injury. We're going to see the effects of those concussion-like effects on our veterans, and we have an obligation to take care of them. And so Florida is obviously a place where a lot of veterans want to come and live. And so a combination of all those things for the future.
Turning to the international stage, what role do you think the United States should be playing? Are you satisfied with the role we're playing now, or what would you do differently moving forward?
Well, our national security is much improved since September the 11th, 2001. I have the privilege of retaining my senior status on the Armed Services Committee and as a senior member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And as I visit with our CIA all over the world, I can tell you that these young people that were so motivated to come into the agency as a result of 9/11, they wanted to do something for their country. They're out there gathering the information to try to stop the terrorist in the first place. It's hard to be 100%, but in a couple of cases, we've been lucky, such as the underwear bomber on the airplane going into Detroit on Christmas Day. But in other cases, it wasn't luck. It was the fact of these young people out there collecting the information and then married up in many cases, such as the takedown of bin Laden, with a quick, lethal, surgical, stealthy strike by the military. And so now we have a situation where after 11 years, 12 years, we're coming home from Afghanistan. We're going to have the withdrawal on a timetable that's set out by our military commanders over the course of the next couple of years. And I think what we need now is the biggest challenge facing the U.S. right now is to keep Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. The president has clearly said that Iran will not develop a nuclear weapon. And if you read the publications, newspapers, you can see that they refer to the fact that the United States has the capability of taking out the development facilities in Natanz and Qom in Iran if they don't back down. The economic sanctions are hurting them. They still continue to rope-a-dope us, but we'll see if they do back down. Otherwise, the president has clearly said what he's going to do.
In your opinion, what's the best thing about our country?
The United States is strong, it's deep, it's resilient because of its people. We are a can-do people. We are a people that sometimes we procrastinate and our backs get up against the wall, but then when it's time to take care of business, Americans do it. We've seen it over and over in our American history because that is our character. We are a people that are also constantly moving on a new frontier. We are exploring. We are by nature explorers. And that's a part of the character of the American people that we never want to give up. And I believe that that character will continue to evidence itself very much. Also, I want to mention the good old-fashioned Yankee ingenuity. It's the creativity in America that is so much in contrast to the rest of the world. But to do that, you've got to have an educated populace. And that's why we never want to turn our attention away from education for our people.
That's the end of my list of questions, Senator Nelson, but is there anything you'd like to add that I didn't ask you about?
I think you have it, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator Bill Nelson, Democrat of Florida.
That was Democratic Senator Bill Nelson, who's seeking a third term in the U.S. Senate. He faces Republican challenger Congressman Connie Mack IV of Fort Myers. Congressman Mack's campaign did not respond to our request for an interview. Now we'll take a look at some of Southwest Florida's U.S. congressional races. First up, we'll hear from Democrat Keith Fitzgerald in the contest for Florida's U.S. House District 16 seat. That district includes Sarasota County and portions of Manatee County. Fitzgerald is a former two-term member of the Florida House representing the Sarasota-Manatee region. He's also a political science professor at New College of Florida in Sarasota. Fitzgerald recently spoke with WGCU's Valerie Elker.
Americans have said they are tired of so-called gridlock in Congress. What would you do to either change this perception or eliminate the gridlock?
Well, the perception's right. There is gridlock. And I think we've gotten to a place in our politics in this country where people who are on a professional track in politics feel like they have to play the game according to the rules. And the rules are that it's a completely partisan thing. Making the other guys look bad or the other guys fail is more important than moving the country forward. This has become institutionalized, and I do think we have to look at institutional reform. But as an individual member, you simply have to go in with a really dedicated idea that you're going to be doing this differently. This is one of our key problems in the whole country. So you have to have the attitude of a problem solver. You have to look at ideas not from which party they came from, but how good they are. You have to be willing to compromise within limits. Obviously, everybody has their principles. And you also have to be willing to accept victory and defeat. In other words, if you can't compromise, have the vote, move on to the next issue. So some of it's just an attitude that our biggest problem right now is we can't solve problems. We would rather see the other side fail than move the country forward. We just got to bring a different attitude. We also need to look at reforming the institutions themselves.
So what steps would you take to help bridge the divide and enact legislation with bipartisan support?
Well, you know, as far as individual pieces of legislation with bipartisan support, you can't really get legislation with bipartisan support if the partisans are determined to vote against anything that the other side comes up with. So we got to be realistic about that. I personally will work with anybody on anything as long as it's a good idea. You know, so for example, let's look at Medicare reform. Medicare is a great program. It's worked brilliantly well. But because of demographics, you have more people consuming than paying in, and because of the increasing cost of health care, there's a financial problem that faces Medicare. We've gotten into this huge partisan and extreme debate where some people say, use as an excuse to try to totally transform Medicare. That's not what's needed, and it's not really practical. What we need to do is look hard at how we contain costs. And honestly, the answers to that are pretty wonky. You know, we have to do things like experimenting with different billing practices, medical home models for delivery systems of health care, things that physicians and people in the health care field have been working on a low level for decades. We've got to look at those things. Get away from this extreme stuff and the scoring points against the other side and really dig into the details and come up with solutions. If you do that, and you can get members of Congress who are dedicated to try to address these problems in practical, straightforward ways, you're going to find room for bipartisan compromise. But it really takes a whole change in attitude and approach. You know, we got to get away from this sort of apocalyptic way of looking at things, that one side is going to emerge victorious over the other, and, you know, we're going to completely transform Medicare into some kind of totally different program. No, let's look at what the problem is and start coming up with practical steps to fix it. There are other things we need to be looking at. For example, campaign finance reform. The flow of money into this system is part of what drives the partisan gridlock and the partisan division. So we've got to figure out ways of getting money out of it. Even the budget process itself has to be looked at, because it's obviously broken. And that takes an institutional fix. I happen to be somebody who studies institutions. Be happy to work on those issues. And again, there's sort of wonky kinds of answers. But if we want to fix these problems, we have to take the attitude of problem fixers, not people in some kind of, you know, Manichaean struggle to wipe out everybody who thinks differently than we do.
As a congressman from Florida, a state hard hit by the economic downturn and still struggling to recover, what kind of legislation would you support that you could help, that you think could help turn things around here in Florida?
Well, again, you know, I like to approach things sort of from a standpoint of, let's fix the problems. First thing you have to identify is what the problem is and where the downturn came from. We're going to face a fact here in Florida that this economic downturn goes right to the core of our economic model, which has largely been based on real estate development and tourism and those sort of things. When the housing market collapsed, it hit us really hard, harder than other people, precisely because that's where the vitality of our economy was. We can use this downturn really as an opportunity to shift this state into being a wealth producer in addition to being a wealth consumer, right? So that means we should be looking at education and we should be looking at infrastructure, two components in some of the legislation that's been proposed and stalled up in Washington. You know, we really need to be investing more in education, more in infrastructure. Up in our district, we have a whole bunch of ports in the district and also in surrounding districts. The Panama Canal is about to open. We have feeder roads that need to be built. We have improvements that can be made, so when that port opens up, Florida could be an exporter of goods all around the world. Why don't we put people to work right now building some of those roads? Just as important, maybe more important, we have had one of the best university systems in the country. We're actually disinvesting in it in the state level. Huge mistake. We should be actually investing more in things like community colleges so that people can be taking the advantage of the economic downturn to invest in themselves, improve their credentials, and the state needs to do more to encourage people and pay for underwrite to some extent people going back and getting that retraining. So that's the approach in a downturn: invest in the future, invest in people, invest in infrastructure.
What do you think is the most challenging issue Florida faces?
Well, I just sort of touched on it right there. I mean, right now we have gotten ourselves into a position where we're walking away from the things that make sense in the long run. We have to be investing in people starting to produce wealth. So, you know, this state really needs to pivot. You know, it really needs to start thinking about itself as an economic competitor on a global basis. And actually, up at the state level, we're disinvesting in education in a huge way that's very damaging. Maybe the four-year college is not the only way we should be thinking about education. K through 12, we prepare people mainly for college. In this state, we had a good community college system. We need to really double down on that. But we also have to protect those four-year colleges so that we can be producing graduate students in high-tech, high-value-added areas, not walking away from that. So, I mean, I think that's our big challenge here, is how do we make this a vital economic state, and we're going in the wrong direction.
And what do you think is the most challenging issue the nation faces?
I think, you know, everybody obviously is going to say it's the economy and jobs. Certainly agree with that. But you know what? I think what you started with, the breakdown of the political system, is our number one problem. Even look at the economy. This particular economic collapse is very, very complicated, and it's global in scope. federal policy doesn't have any magic button to push that will fix this thing overnight, which we did, but we don't. However, one of the main things that's holding us back from turning the corner is the complete lack of confidence that people have in Washington just to be able to do its business. They can't pass a budget because of partisan gridlock and hyper-partisanship. They can't do the basic things. They can't renew the recurring bills that come up. They're not getting the job done, and that creates a great sense of apprehension for investors, for people who might like to hire. So we really have to get politics fixed. We've got to do the campaign finance reform. We have to replace the partisanship with problem solving. We have to get back to a sense of compromise. Looming on the horizon is this gigantic problem that will come when the sequestration cliff is reached because of the gun they put to their heads in Congress back when they were doing the debt ceiling thing. We've got to get that fixed because it will crash the economy because the political system cannot do its business. So that, I think, is our number one problem. There is no simple solution. We need different people with a different attitude and a different approach. And the people have to stand up and demand it. And then when you get up there, you have to take a hard look at how business is done and start making some institutional changes, starting with campaign finance reform.
So you've already pretty much answered this, which is my final question, but it is, what can Congress do to move the nation forward?
Right. It has to look at itself. You know, it has to get away from trying to score points. I mean, look, I serve in the state legislature, and you see the same thing there that you see in Congress. People in both caucuses, obviously I'm on one side, I think the other guys are worse, but both caucuses sit around in the caucus room thinking up ways to make the other guys look bad rather than thinking up ways of moving the state and moving the country forward. Congress needs to fix itself. And the way that voters can start that is putting some different people in Congress, people with the right attitude and the right approach.
Keith Fitzgerald, Democrat for U.S. House seat 16 from Florida. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
That was Florida's U.S. House District 16 Democratic candidate, Keith Fitzgerald. He faces Republican Congressman Vern Buchanan in next week's election. Buchanan's campaign declined our request for an interview. We'll head south now for a look at Florida's U.S. House District 17 race. That district includes Charlotte, DeSoto, Hardy, Highlands, Okeechobee, and Glades counties, as well as portions of Hillsborough, Manatee, Polk, and Lee counties, including Lehigh Acres. We'll hear now from the Democrat in that race, William Bronson. Bronson is a former commercial airline pilot and naval aviator. He spoke with WGCU's Valerie Alker.
Americans have said they are tired of so-called gridlock in Congress. What would you do to either change this perception or eliminate the gridlock?
Well, unfortunately, it's not just a perception, it's a reality. And I think the most significant picture of that is the vote that came down on what was recorded as 10 key votes by the Alliance for Retired Americans. And from the Florida delegation of 25 congressmen and women, there were 19 Republican congressmen and 6 Democrats, and all the Republicans scored 0 on that score except for Connie Mack, who had percent, and all the Democrats scored 100%. So there's clearly very different view as to what should be done regarding the future of our seniors, of which our district represents 46% of the voters. And this carries on into other important issues where there's a severe ideological divide between Republicans and Democrats as to what's the proper role of the government. And generally speaking, the Republicans agree with Grover Norquist's famous quote, we don't want to destroy government, we just want to get it down to the size where we can drown it in the bathtub. And Democrats, on the other hand, feel that we're in this together, as President Obama has said. It's not you're on your own, and that we need the government to partner with us to solve some of the serious problems facing our society today.
Well, dovetailing off that question, Many Americans have said that the partisan divide in Congress is too wide. Do you agree? And what steps, as a congressman, would you take to help bridge that divide and enact legislation with bipartisan support?
Well, unfortunately, the gridlock in Washington is reflected in the gridlock in the country, and it's been truly said we get the government we deserve. And the American people, E.J. Dionne has written an interesting book recently about sort of our divided hearts regarding our country and our economy. And the problem is that the voters need to either send to Congress those who will cooperate with government to try to and contain some of the abuses and excesses of the corporatocracy that's trying to take over, or they have to figure that Grover Norquist is right, that we should minimize government to the point where it's not any factor at all in society, and then that would break the gridlock the other way. But unfortunately, we're at a point in our history where these two different ideologies are about evenly matched, and certainly that's the case in Congress. And when you watch these votes go down, they're almost always 230 or so on one side and 230 some on the other side. And it's unfortunate, but it's an issue that, because of the nature of our government, isn't going to go away until the American people and the electorate make up their mind to support one side or the other.
As a congressman from Florida, a state hard hit by the economic downturn and still struggling to recover, what kind of legislation would you support that you think could help turn things around?
Well, as you know, there's a very interesting book that came out recently called Bailout, written by Neil Barofsky, and he was the special Inspector General for the Treasury Department regarding the TARP program. Now, the TARP program was about $700 billion that was designed not only to help the banks survive this crisis, but also to help the homeowners survive. And unfortunately, his front row seat to this whole process, he observed that the banks took the money and ran, essentially leaving the homeowners hanging. And I think that we need to take a new look at what happened with those TARP funds and be sure that the homeowners get the support that was intended with those funds. And if that happened and we could get the middle class back on track, I think the economy would start to grow. The reason the economy is dead in the water is because nobody has any money to spend. And the middle class is quickly disappearing. And with a situation like that, with this degree of income inequality, the economy can't go. And on our website, bronsonforcongress.com, there's a video that people can access called The New Enlightenment, which is about income inequality. And it quotes Nobel Prize-winning economists such as Joe Stiglitz and Paul Krugman and others who have pointed out that one of the characteristics of a culture that has massive inequality of income is that they suffer economic stagnation, and that's exactly the situation we have today.
What do you think is the most challenging issue Florida faces?
Well, the situation Florida faces is a situation that we have nationwide, and that is terrific beating that the middle class has taken from the financial shenanigans that were going on in Washington with the people gambling with pension funds and taking huge risks and benefiting by it. And when they made poor choices and Wall Street collapsed, they were bailed out. They were made whole. But unfortunately, the taxpayers weren't. And unless we can solve this problem of correcting the abuses of those with a great deal of money who are controlling essentially the Congress through lobbying and electioneering in investments of huge amounts to be sure they get the kind of people there who are going to protect their interests. One example of that was the latest farm bill that had what was called the Monsanto Rider. Now, the Monsanto Rider basically deregulated Monsanto's attempt to patent seeds and eventually our whole food supply. And it was brought about by the fact that Monsanto has huge lobbying interests in Washington where they can get these things through Congress that protect their particular interests. And that's just one of many examples I could give you that shows that the government is being really purchased by big multinational corporate interests, and we have to reestablish a level playing field between Wall Street and Washington and Main Street.
My next question was, what do you think is the most challenging issue the nation faces? You said, when you answered my previous question, you said that Florida faces the same challenge the nation faces, but do you think there's anything that sets Florida apart from, say, Illinois or Connecticut? You know, what specifically Florida?
Sure. Even more so, Florida has been hurt in the housing market because we were experiencing a lot of people coming down here to retire who were looking forward to being able to enjoy their pensions. And then we saw with the financial debacle in Washington that through no fault of their own, their 401ks were disappearing, their pension funds were going south. And the property values that they thought would be strong also disappeared. So the housing market took a terrific hit, and therefore we have all kinds of people in the construction trades who are out of work and losing their own homes, and it's just a terrific problem for Florida. And besides that, when property values decrease, so do the tax revenues that state and local governments use to support their school systems and other public services that make life attractive in Florida. And for us to bring in the type of jobs that we're looking for, high-tech jobs, well-paying jobs, to reestablish the middle class, we have to create an environment where companies will want to relocate because of the quality of life, which includes the schools and the parks and the libraries, the public services that we all want to enjoy, the good roads and streets and infrastructure that's necessary. So Florida was particularly hit in this regard because of the housing crisis. And the housing crisis could be corrected if those original TARP funds were spent properly. And so I think that has to be looked at again, these banks have to be called to account to step up to the plate and see that they fulfilled the conditions, the original conditions of TARP, which was to help the homeowners.
So what can Congress do to move the nation forward?
Well, one thing they could do is not vote against the HARP program, which my opponent, Tom Rooney, did. They could vote in favor of programs that would create alternative energy and good paying jobs in the fields of rebuilding our infrastructure. We have to look at the government as our partner in this process and not as the enemy. And I think once we get clear as to the appropriate role of government in helping this country out of the worst depression since the 30s, which at that time was alleviated by an aggressive effort to reestablish the middle class through progressive income taxes. Back at that time, as you know, top income tax rate was 91%. When Reagan took over, it was 70%. It's gone down to about 29%. And even Mr. Romney, who wants to be president, is only paying 13%. What that does is it undercuts the resources that are necessary in the public sector to create the kind of lives that all of us want.
Will Bronson, Democratic candidate for the U.S. Congress from District 17 in Florida, thank you very much for talking to us today.
You're welcome.
That was WGCU's Valerie Alker speaking with Democratic candidate in the race for Florida's District 17 U.S. congressional seat, William Bronson. He faces Republican Congressman Tom Rooney, who currently serves on the House Armed Services Committee, the Agriculture Committee, and the Select Committee on Intelligence. Congressman Rooney's campaign did not respond to our interview requests in time for this program. That's all the time we have for today's show. There's more information on today's program, as well as an archive of past shows at our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. To comment on anything you've heard on this or any edition of the program, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Thanks to my producers Richard Chinqui, Luke Martin, and Valerie Alker. This is WGCU, Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.